Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Super Paint, Super Deck, and Woodscapes products June 12th through the 22nd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Moncrief on News Talk.
The interview we're going to do now, some of you might find disturbing or even repugnant. There is a phenomenon known as genetic sexual attraction, or GSA, and that's where biologically related siblings, or even parents and children, meet as adults for the first time, and rather than the usual familial feelings, they experience intense romantic attraction to each other. And that's what happened to Sophia Greenwood. That isn't her real name, and as you'll hear in the interview, we have altered her voice. Sophia is the author of a book about her experience called Forbidden Love. Good afternoon, Sophia.
Good afternoon.
Did you always know you were adopted?
Yes, I did. I mean, I don't remember being told or anything, but I'm. My parents told me when I was, you know, a schoolgirl or something. So as long as I can remember, I suppose, I knew, but it wasn't really a conscious thing until I was older, I suppose. But they did tell me when I was young, but I don't have a memory of being told.
And was there a certain point in your life when you felt a desire to make contact with your birth parents?
Yes. When I sort of became a young adult, I used to think about it more and more. And then it was when I saw a baby being born, actually, that it really hit me. Wow, you know, I came out of someone else, and what happened there, and where is she, and why did she give me away? So that's when I sort of started thinking about it a lot more.
And then was it relatively easy to get in contact with your birth mother?
So I basically, a colleague of mine, we were chatting one day, and she told me that she was adopted and that she'd recently found her birth mother. And I was obviously intrigued. And she told me she'd gone through an agency, an adoption agency called NORCAP, and she gave me their phone number. So eventually I sort of plucked up the courage to give them a call and start the process. And they sent someone round to the house to interview me and sort of ask various questions and get all the information I had. And then they went away. And then they phoned me up and invited me up to the office in London and sort of just basically said, oh, well, your mother registered with us 15 years ago, hoping that one day you would come looking for her. And so we have her details here.
You must have been very pleased by that. Was there any preparation, as in counselling or anything like that, that you undertook before you got in contact with her?
No, this is the whole thing, really, Sean. There was absolutely nothing at all. There was no pre-reunion counselling. There was no discussion about boundaries to be set or that it might be highly emotional and overwhelming. They basically just gave me her details and sort of said good luck, and off I went. And so I left the office in a daze started crying. And, the whole thing was very overwhelming. It was obviously exciting, but it was weird. It was like the story had come true suddenly. It had come to life. This story of being adopted was coming to life, and I didn't really know how to process it. I was just able to go away and pick up the telephone.
And when you did make contact with your mother and started to build a relationship, did you find that relationship overwhelming?
Yes, I did. I phoned her up and she answered. And, you know, hello, I think I'm your daughter. And she was overjoyed. And it soon became apparent to me that she had carried this grief and all for all these years and had carried a love for her baby for all these years. And a deep maternal love for the baby that she'd lost. And for me, you know, she was a lady I didn't know. And I knew the fact that she was my biological mother, but I had no feelings about it, about her. And I had no memories of any bond with her. So, you know, it was a very intimate thing where you shared everything about yourselves and talked as if you were close or something. But it was very difficult to process because I had a mother that I'd been brought up with. So I didn't really know how to place this new relationship. You know.
And as time went on, that relationship with your birth mother, were you able to kind of make sense of it? Were you able to kind of, if you like, I suppose, this woman who, as you say, was a stranger to you, were you able to find a mental category to put her into?
Yeah, so over time, I got to know her. And her love was genuine and unconditional. And so it was kind of quite special. But unfortunately, my birth parents, my adoptive parents, beg your pardon, were not at all keen on me looking for my biological parents. So when I told them I might do that, they categorically said they were not interested and that she didn't want me. And they were told when they adopted me that she could never come looking for me. And if they'd known that the law was going to change whereby she could, then they wouldn't have adopted me in the first place. So that was very hard for me. So I had to do it on my own behind their back. So there was a lot of guilt and no one to talk to about it. And she was very loving. And so, you know, and she wanted me to call her mum, which I did start doing. But it felt like a betrayal of my other mum because she would be mortified if she'd known. And then my birth mother was very, very keen to, she just couldn't stop phoning me every single day and just wanted to be with me. And it was very intense. It was super intense. So I found it a little bit difficult to process, yeah. And I had no idea or thought that I could go and get some sort of support or counselling. I just did it on my own. You know.
But she had given you a method of or contact details for your birth father, who was in Australia at this stage. When you first made contact with him, did that feel different in any way to your initial introduction to your birth mother?
Yeah. Well, yes, in a way it did. I don't really know why, except he was a different person and he was a male. But I don't know why, but yes, it felt different. It's hard to describe, really. I mean, we talked the first few times we talked. It was just, it was less intense, I suppose, perhaps because he's a guy and he wasn't so gushy. He was very thoughtful and measured and kind. And we just could gently get to know each other on the telephone over a period of months. We just seemed to be much more similar, and we just very easily, I felt very comfortable with him. Yeah, so it did feel a bit different, but it also felt very intense, but but different.
And when you first met each other in person, I think, as I understand it, he flew over to visit you first.
Yes.
Were you aware of some other aspect to your feelings there at that stage?
No, not really. I knew I enjoyed talking to him, and I knew that we seemed to just be very much on the same wavelength, and we could just talk for hours. It was very inspiring for me, and it felt very easy. But I thought we were going through a process of getting to know each other. I didn't have any ideas of anything other than that at the time. No.
When did you start to feel those feelings?
Well, pretty much. I mean, we had talked for so long and so often on the telephone. I felt very close and comfortable with him and safe, and he was just a very interesting person to talk to. And so when I met him, we just felt immediately comfortable. It was very fascinating, and I don't know, we spoke, you know, picked him up, and we just talked and talked and talked and talked, and then we went off for lunch, and suddenly it just felt like being with someone that you get on super well with, and you start to feel this warmth towards them that feels that feels familiar, that feels like, oh, this is what it feels like when you're with a guy that you are hitting it off with. Yeah, I suppose it was like that.
When did you become aware that he was starting to feel the same? Did you have an initial conversation about that?
No, I mean, I think on some level you know, when you meet someone and you really like them and you're drawn to them, you can tell, well, certainly I can tell when someone is feeling that same level of interest or attraction. You can just sort of tell. But it's such a long time ago. My memories aren't, you know, super clear about exactly, but certainly the first night when I was, you know, just trying to sleep, I was very confused about how I was feeling around him. But we didn't have a conversation about it, as far as I remember. We were just enjoying each other's company, lots of laughter, lots of talk, very easy camaraderie sort of thing. So it was very confusing because obviously I knew that he was my biological father, although he always wasn't 100% sure. I mean, he came to meet me to hope, like, having been told that I was by her all those years ago, but there'd never been any paternity test done or anything like that. And he, when he saw me at the airport, he was looking for signs of recognition, you know, did we look similar or something, and we didn't. And so we then did start, you know, we had conversations about, you know, the questions he'd asked himself over the years. You know, what was I definitely his daughter? So, yeah, that's where we were at that stage. It just getting to know each other and feeling ridiculously comfortable and at ease with each other. But in the back of the mind, knowing, oh, this is supposed to be such and such, but it's feeling like something else. Well, before he came over, he suggested, why didn't I book a holiday for us for somewhere warm so that we could, you know, get away from the normal life and just sort of get to know each other. So I booked a holiday for us. So it was when we went on that holiday, which was only, I suppose, about a week after he arrived, we went off on holiday, and it's so strange to say, but I mean, it just felt like a couple of adults meeting who were just feeling very attracted to each other. So it was, you know, I had my thoughts going on and all sorts of confusion, and he did as well. But yeah, on that holiday is when the boundaries were crossed.
Yes. And then what was it soon after that, that then you made the decision to move to Australia so you could be with each other full time?
Well, no, it wasn't soon after that. I mean, he'd only come over for 2 weeks. But because we were in this situation now, he extended his stay, and he stayed for 6 weeks in the end. So we went to Amsterdam, and we went to London, and we did all sorts of things. We went to the Lake District, blah, blah, blah. And there was no counselling, there was no boundaries, there was no understanding. And I had a father, and he had never been a dad. He didn't have any children, other children. And it just felt totally like we were just falling in love. Anyway, he went back after that 6 weeks, and we found that we were we're finding it very difficult to be apart, like you do when you fall in love with someone. And so we talked on the phone a lot, and he went back to work and I went back to work here. And eventually we arranged that I would go over there for a month to see him and see what happened then. So I did do that. And then by then it was, we were just feeling like we couldn't be apart. So, and I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. So I came back and then started the visa application and so on. And so then it was about a year after we met that I moved over there.
And then when you moved over there and you were living together over a period of time, even though obviously, as you've described there, the attraction was genuine and seemed to be very intense, and you couldn't be without each other. Was there an additional strain, though, knowing what the biological relationship between the two of you was?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, intellectually, we knew that this was that. Intellectually, it was wrong, but emotionally, it was far more confusing, you know, because we met as strangers rather than as parent and child. And looking back, I believe that reunion trauma, attachment needs, and the absence of that natural familial, you know, boundary that we all have, all played a significant role in what was going on. I mean, it's not. It's not a moral thing or a lack of intelligence. You know, GSA and this sort of this intense magnetism that we experience and a lot of people have experienced is, it's like something that it's almost indescribable, really, because I had a normal life before with normal heterosexual relationships, and so did he. And so it was you know, we just, it was most unexpected. But yes, of course, we struggled with it. Of course we did.
And it seemed to bring you to the point where you decided that you were going to go back to live in the UK. And was it the night before you were due to depart that you discovered you were pregnant?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a very honest, sort of open person, and the secrecy was getting too much for me. I mean, I thought, well, where are we going to go with this? How on earth is this going to end? We can't do this anymore. I mean, you know, we just can't do this. So I have to leave. And, he there's no way he was going to try and stop me. I mean, he was very supportive and just wanted my welfare. So basically, you know, it was an agony. Like if you're deeply in love with somebody and then you, for some reason, have to split up, it was just like that. And because it never felt incestuous, and that's the weird thing. He never felt like my father. He didn't feel like a relative, but he felt like the closest person that I've ever had. I felt closer to him than I've ever felt with anyone, including my parents. So it was just like finding a soulmate. It's hard to describe, but so we booked for my return, and the week prior to the flight, I was just feeling exhausted and drained, and he just had a feeling, and he said, "I think you should do a pregnancy test," and so I did one the night before the flight, and yeah, it was positive.
Ultimately, I mean, as I understand it, you did go back, you did take that flight, but then you returned to have your son in Australia.
Yeah.
And your son was perfectly healthy?
Yeah, absolutely. Perfectly healthy, yeah. obviously, when he came out and the midwife was holding him, I obviously was, is he okay? Is he okay? And she was like, the midwife didn't know anything. So, but she, he's perfectly fine. And went straight on to breastfeeding and off we went. And he's a beautifully healthy, tall, strong, happy man, now. And he's always been healthy. We've never had any issues. He had his tonsils out when he was young, and that was it. Otherwise, he's perfectly healthy.
That is good to hear. Now, and you did remain in Australia for another 15 months or so, but then returned with your son back to the UK. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, because of the complexity of our situation. We were living this life as a couple, very happy, but we knew that it wouldn't be socially acceptable. We told some friends and everyone was very understanding. We never had any judgment from people who knew us, but we knew, intellectually that there were laws against incest, and that this would be considered that a form of that. So, but it was just a big worry for me with my parents, because obviously they didn't know. So I was living a sort of a secret kind of existence. And so in the end, it just became too stressful for me, and for both of us, but he would never have left me. He just felt like somehow we'll get through this, somehow we'll be okay. And but I, I was just full of fear and worry, so I decided to go back to England.
When you did go back to England, did you tell your family the truth of the situation?
Yes, yeah. I mean, not immediately. You know, initially I made up a story about, you know, a boyfriend that I'd got pregnant with. But eventually, Mum asked me directly who the father was. And because, you know, it was a burden for me to carry. So I told her, and she said at the time, I knew it. I knew that this was the situation. She had a feeling that was what it was. So obviously then we told the rest of the family.
That must have been very difficult for you.
Yeah, it was difficult. I don't know how I survived it all in a way, but the memories are a bit vague. I'm very resilient. I don't know. My parents were very good, really. They didn't really blame me, you see, they blamed him. And this is why in the end, I felt I wanted to write a story, because I'm hoping to raise awareness and more discussion and research about the power of what goes on after separation and reunion and that sort of thing. Because, of course, without them understanding that dynamic, they naturally blamed him as the older man for allowing this to happen. And perhaps it suited them in some way to see me as a victim. But I didn't ever feel like a victim. I mean, there was no coercion. There was no... It was just a mutual thing. But they... blamed him. So I just had to get on with my life being a single mother, and they were there for me.
Did you tell your birth mother?
Yes, I did. But by then I wasn't in touch with her, and there were no mobile phones or anything like that back then, and social media wasn't such a thing. So we hadn't kept in touch for a long time. It was years later, I reconnected, and then we met up, and but she already knew. That's right, because I went on a national television show years earlier, anonymously, to talk about this. There was a documentary with lots of other couples who were in love, brothers and sisters and mothers and sons and so on. And I went on anonymously, but it was on national television, and they changed my name and everything. But she was watching it, and she just knew that it was me somehow, like a mother does, I suppose. But it was never confirmed for her, because she phoned them up and they wouldn't tell her who I was. But she knew then. But then, so when I met up with her, we talked about it. And I actually told her that I was thinking of writing a book about it. And she was, obviously it was hard for her, but she also was amazing.
Now there is... and there was for your birth father and subsequently for you legal ramifications for this, in that in Australia, was he actually prosecuted for incest?
Yeah, so his ex-girlfriend decided to report our relationship because she was bitter and on the warpath after they split up. And because it was very unusual and they didn't know how to categorize a situation like this, they took him in to custody and questioned him and, you know, took him to court. It had to be looked at and managed in some way, but they didn't really know how. So they called it technical incest. When he asked them what did they mean by that, it didn't have an answer. So it obviously wasn't incest with a child or with a victim. So, but because there's a law against incest in certain states, ultimately the judge was given paperwork about GSA. And he had never heard of it, but that information about GSA influenced his decision as to how to handle the situation. And he basically just gave him a 1-year suspended sentence.
A subsequent investigation into you, they dropped all the charges altogether. We do have to leave it there, Sophia, but thank you so much for talking with us today. The name of Sophia's book is Forbidden Love, A True Story of Adoption, Reunion and Longing. Sophia Greenwood, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye now.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.